Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Wild Ginger Running YouTube channel live broadcast and subsequent podcast. Today, we are starting an exciting new series that I personally feel very passionate about. It's called Last and Proud of It. So basically, I've reached a stage where I am, in a nice way, kind of pretty nonplussed about elite athletes winning races and setting records. I used to be really in awe of all these lofty achievements, but I think I have a lot more in common with, and I'm even more in awe of all the people in the middle of the pack like me, the back of the pack like me, and the person who comes last of all, also like me. So this new series celebrates the normal ultra runners who come last in some of the UK's most famous races and are quite rightly very proud of their amazing achievement. Just like us, these unsung heroes have busy, stressful lives filled with jobs, kids, pets, relatives, mental or physical health issues and injuries. Their training and racing has great highs and terrible lows, but they keep on running and jogging and walking and even crawling to that finish line. So we're here today to find out, what did it take? What was their training like? How did the race pan out? How did they beat all those cutoffs against the odds? And in particular, what hard-won golden nuggets of advice can they give to us normal ultra runners about this race in particular, ultra running and life in general? So today is the first episode. It's about the infamous arc of attrition 50 miler down in Cornwall, which I'm about to do in January. So here we've got the real life training and racing story from the last place finisher in 2023. It's the incredible, the amazing Lizzie Hughes, everybody.
Hello.
Welcome, Lizzie. How are you doing today?
Yes, really well, thank you. Probably a lot like other people, trying to finish off Christmas bits and bobs around the family and everything else. So yeah, really good. Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for sparing the time. I know you're really busy, especially at this time of year. It's the last thing that I'm doing before Christmas work-wise, that's for sure. I've got so many questions for you, Lizzie, about the arc. But just before we get started, I just need to mention that this podcast and broadcast is sponsored by Knack Sports Nutrition, who make a long-lasting energy bars, waffles and drinks using high-quality, sustainable ingredients. I use this, their Ultra Energy Berries and Nuts Bar, on my last training session, and I really like the taste. It's not overly sweet. It sort of tastes like that raspberry licorice, the nice fruity stuff that you can get from the health food shop. Doesn't really taste of licorice, just kind of fruity, but not too sweet, and it's easy to chew as well. So I'm definitely looking forward to using these and more products from Knack on my Arc of Attrition 50 this January. Go to knack.com for more. There we go. That's the adverts done. So now, Lizzie, let's get on to the arc and your story. So let's wind the clock back from your fantastic Arc 50. Bit of background. Tell us about your running history. How did you first get into running?
So I've been running pretty much all of my life, I guess. When I was really young, we used to get involved in something called hashing, and I know that's sort of like a countrywide thing. So my dad would always take us on a Sunday, and you sort of cover about 4 miles really, really slowly, and yeah, it's just a real feel-good thing. When I was at secondary, I then got involved in the cross-country team. My sister was there already, and so it's kind of like a natural step for me, and she's a fantastic athlete even now as well, so she's a real inspiration to me. through uni, through college I did a little bit, through uni I did more athletics, but then sort of in my adult life I've done lots of half marathons, marathons. Actually in 2018 I completed the Ironman in Bolton.
Wow.
So yeah, that was really incredible. And generally speaking, I sort of get dragged into these things by friends. You'll be like sat down having a coffee, or someone will message you and say, oh, have you seen this? And I'm like, oh God, all right, go on then. And then as it gets closer, I'm like, why have I done this to myself? So the arc was like that, and so was the Ironman, sort of getting dragged in by friends.
But what kind of friends do you have? Like, I'm the most extreme of all my friends. They're like, they think what I do is mad. They're like more likely to be dragging me to the cinema.
No, they really, really put me to shame. I've got some really amazing friends who do, you know, fantastic things, so you know, I sort of try and follow a little bit in their footsteps and you know, take inspiration from others, I guess.
Yeah. Oh, that's amazing. So you've been a runner all your life, and what's your day job?
So I'm a teacher. So I work in secondary. I'm a science teacher. So that can be quite full on, particularly if you're running a practical. You've got 30 kids with Bunsen burners and you're just looking around thinking, what are we doing?
Yes. Yeah. 30 young kids with flamethrowers, basically.
Yeah. God, yeah.
Yeah. So it sounds
it's a great job. And I'm really, you know, I love it. It's fantastic. It's a great career to have.
Yeah. It sounds like a full on job. And did you mention that you have some kids as well?
Yes, so I've got two children. So Rory is 4. So after I had the Ironman, after I did the Ironman, I had him. And then I've got my daughter, Nola, who's 2. And that's actually kind of how I decided to do the arc. I had a friend running it and I came out to cheer him on, and she would have been about, I don't know, 6-7 months old. And I was like, I need to get my butt back in action, start doing something again. And so I spoke to him afterwards. He's like, yeah, sign up. I'm doing it again next year. And I expect he'll be on the start line again this year.
Awesome. Yeah. Oh, brilliant. Yeah. Okay, so that's what made you sign up to the arc.
What
was your first ultra then? Can you recall?
So actually it was the RAT on the south coast. So I don't know if you would have heard of it. So there's a couple of options there, but as you know, as someone who's going to do the arc, you need to have a qualifying race. So my qualifying race was signing up for the RAT, and it was 33 or 34 miles, but yeah, something along those lines.
Okay.
So yeah, and a Cornish coast again, so really beautiful, lovely place to run, but a real shock to the system when you think about doing your marathon and going, oh, you know, it's only a few more miles on top of that. But as any runner will say, it's a lot of it is the headspace, isn't it? Really the mental game with something like that.
Yeah, and that's so the RAT, that's organised by Mud Crew as well, that put on the arc. So yes, and being down in Cornwall there, it was a good choice for you.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Okay, and so you've told us a little bit about the arc, but for somebody listening to this podcast or broadcast that has never heard of the arc before, the arc of attrition, can you tell us a little bit about the race? Like, where does it start and finish, the route, like what's it like underfoot?
Yeah, so it's really beautiful. So you start at the Minak Theatre, and they have everybody down at the bottom, so where a play would be given. So if anybody wants to have a look, you know, it's such a picturesque place. There's loads of options on Google to have a look at what the start line is like.
Absolutely beautiful. It's on the edge of the cliff, isn't it? Right on the cliff edge, that theatre.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And they've got, you know, a couple of beaches around from it, one that's a real scramble to get down to, but it's just completely stunning. So it's really, really beautiful. But you get dropped off by the buses, then you walk sort of, I don't know, half a mile to get down to the Minak. They've got like coffee stations set up, and it's always that weird thing with a long race where you start and it's like, I don't know, 6 o'clock in the morning and everywhere else is dead quiet, but we sort of like scramble in and there's a real buzz around the place. And I'm pretty sure we saw a dolphin on the I don't think it was a dolphin or a seal, but we saw a dolphin on the morning of it.
Wow.
And they announced it on the PA system and everyone's like looking out to sea, and it was really special.
Oh, that's lovely. Because did you see the sunrise then, like over the sea, over the horizon?
Yeah, really gorgeous. I've still got pictures now, actually, and I think you look at them and just think, wow, like what a great start to a race. So they start you all off down there, and then they get their flares going, and you run out from the bottom, sort of all up the steps, and there's like funny tiered seating that people all scramble up, and then you get out onto the course just like from the top of there. But I think probably from being a cross-country runner, it's always that thing of you've got to get a great head start so you like really boom out of there. And it sounds funny because I came last. I think I've got to get a great start. I don't want to get stuck behind anyone. But I think that's just an ingrained thing, isn't it? So, I had a really good start. And one of the amazing athletes who were interviewed at the start of the race, she ended up coming past me. And I was like, I must be in a real good point if I must have really started well if she's having to come past me.
That's brilliant.
So, yeah, that was really cool. That was really cool.
Awesome. So it starts at Minnack in Porthcurno, and then you head over to the Eco Park in Porthtowan, 50 miles for 2,300 metres of ascent. Is it all along the coast then? Is it pretty easy to navigate?
So, relatively easy to navigate. I think the only point where I was a bit like, and considering, you know, I've grown up down here, I do a lot of walking on the coast, and the only point where I got a bit stuck was coming sort of from Portreath across to Porthtowan, and there's like a fork in the road where you can't tell whether you're going to go down or you're going to go up. And, you know, being so close to the finish line, and I was really close to the final cutoff, I'm there like head in my hands thinking, oh, I don't know which way to go. And I know if I go the wrong way, you know, it could mean me sort of capping out. And so go left there. As if you're in a similar point to me.
If in doubt, go left.
Exactly. And it's really dark. So it's hard. And, you know, you start off with your torches, but I don't know, it's quite disorientating. So
yeah,
go left.
Go left. Okay, go left. Yeah. Okay, brilliant. That's it. That's good to know. Definitely, I'll need that information for sure. And underfoot, what is it? I've heard that it can be really muddy.
Yeah, so there's a point that really sticks in my mind where they've got like, there's a lot of boulders. So it's along the coast path, but underneath it's quite marshy. And, you know, it has been raining quite a lot recently, so you might have quite similar terrain. And there's just like really big granite boulders that you're kind of like going from one to the next. So there's no real pace and it's quite jarring. And, you know, there's a few scrabbles like that come to the end of Gwenver Beach, and you're trying to go up like little jumps up in the step, and, you know, the people ahead of you are struggling. So you're just, it's that sort of stilted stop start. So yeah, it can be a real challenge. And I just feel quite unnatural when you're used to being out road running or even coast running when you're on your own. You really do set your own pace. You stop when you want, you carry on when you want. But yeah, that's a real funny one. Yeah.
So the train's difficult then. It's not just a run. It's like a bit of scrambling by foot.
Definitely.
Okay. And so just before we come onto the actual race that you ran yourself and you achieved this amazing thing, were there any barriers to your training that you had to overcome? Like, were there any like difficulties that you found in that training process?
Yeah, definitely. So, you know, with all the best intentions to get out and run as much as you can, busy life, kids, my husband works away, so it's really hard to get out. And, you know, you get 2 days for a weekend, and then you don't want to be out running for like 4, 5, 6 hours. So it's really difficult to sort of like get those miles under your belt. And I definitely didn't train as much as I'd like to. And I remember thinking, I used to have a piano teacher who'd say this thing to me, you know, if you fail to prepare, you must prepare to fail. And I was like, well, I definitely failed to prepare as much as I'd like to, but absolutely no circumstances am I gonna miss out on finishing this. So I was just like, I've got to sort of put my mental ahead of my physical and just, you know, keep reminding myself I can do this. You know, I've done endurance things before, like the Ironman, where I've had to keep going and sort of overcome that. And I guess it's kind of, I don't know if you've ever had this in a race, but I've had it before, where you have this sort of elation where you feel like, oh my God, I can actually do this. Like, look how far I've come. Like, I'm going to finish this no matter what, I'm going to finish it. And I, you know, you can get on a real high with that, and that can drive you through for such a long way, feeling like, you know, I can't believe I'm going to do it kind of thing. And I definitely had that in the race. I did a lot of other bits as well, things that I could fit in. So we've got a spin bike at home, so I'd make sure I got on that and spin. So, you know, keeping my CV up, even if I couldn't get out and run because I've got the kids at home, I could get on the bike and do a couple of hours or whatever it might be. I really enjoy CrossFit, so I'd go that, do that, and that would be a lot of strength training, but also cardio as well. So for me, training isn't just, you know, completely running. There's a lot of strength and other bits involved as well.
Yeah, well, that's good to know about the biking as well. We've got Steve's got the like Zwift thing on his bike down in the garage, so maybe I should hop on that.
I think it's quite nice, isn't it? Turn your legs over, keep your hips feeling good.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And the CrossFit, was that like a class that you went to, or is that just like on YouTube that you follow along and you can stay at home where the kids are?
Yeah, so we've got a Peloton account, and so they've got like bodyweight exercise on there that I'll do. But if I go to a CrossFit class, it is something that I do sort of outside of the house. It's a class that I go to in Truro. But for me, that's also my social, which probably sounds a bit funny, but you know, a lot of my friends I have made through sport. So, you know, I love going to a Friday evening class and everyone's like in a great mood because work's over. And yeah, it's just really a nice thing to do, I guess.
Yeah, awesome. Oh, that's brilliant. And so was there a weekly sort of mileage that you got to, or like a weekly amount of ascent that you did? Did you have a plan in mind for your weekly training?
Not as such. You know, that is something that, you know, a lot of people are really good at being disciplined at, but that's not something that I was able to do, just because of the nature of my job and my home life. But I think going out and, you know, doing what you would do on the day. So getting out and doing challenging parts of the coast pass. So, you know, northern end of Cornwall, there's some really challenging runs that we can do. And there's obviously, you know, the finish end isn't that far from me. So I live in Perranporth and the finish is in Porthtowan. So those places aren't too far apart. So it's quite easy for me to go and practice things like the steps, because at the end there's like two sets of down, up, down, up, that, you know, once you're exhausted, it's so hard on your legs. So that was good to kind of get a feel for.
I saw that in one of Lloyd Purvis's videos, because I'm not anywhere near Cornwall. It's like 5-7 hours driveway from me. I've been watching the Run for Adventure films that he does, and I saw those steps and they look evil right at the end. So I need to find some steps.
I really, really would recommend it, because it's kind of that uneven feeling, and because it's towards the end, like my hips were really bad, my knee was really bad, so, you know, going up and down there, I was like I can't do this. And I had my sister saying to me a few times, like, come on, you can do this. And I was like, I know I can, I just don't want to, like, I've had enough, like, I want to go home, I'm tired, I'm cold, I'm hungry. But it's like the emotions of the race, isn't it? It's a full-on day.
Well, that's interesting that you said that you practice on those steps, because we have a question from Lloyd Watkins, who's one of my patrons on the channel, and he wants to know what preparation or recces did you do, if any? So you've sort of answered that question. I think he's down to 100 this year.
My goodness. Amazing.
He's done lots of hundreds before. He's pretty amazing. He said, I did the Atlantic Coast Challenge back in October, and I'm planning on the Jurassic Coast Challenge in March. Are they useful events to do?
So they're not ones that I have done, so I wouldn't be able to comment on that. And maybe some other people on the podcast have or on your chat have done them, so they might be able to weigh in. But they're not ones that I have done. But I'd say if you're going to do this, the sections near the section that goes under Zena is a really good one to look at, because there's steps in that one as well. The bouldering coming to the end of Gwenba is really good to look at as well. If you are not familiar with the area, I'd have a really close look at coming through the dunes on the other side of Hale, because that's quite difficult. There's a bit along the coast path from St Ives to Hale that I got lost on, and that's somewhere that I've walked many times, but because it's dark, because you're tired, I took a wrong turn there, and that was a, you know, frustrating mistake. But if I was not familiar with the dunes coming through Hale, I would have, you know, got completely lost, and I was getting really close to the end, to the cap off time, so it was stressful, you know. You're just like, and I was with two other runners who were in a similar position, and we were just like, you know, we have to try and find these markers in the sand, but you're not seeing one point to the next is really, really challenging. So that is something that I would look at personally. And then probably something that he already knows, but training with your food, whatever you're going to eat, that's what I would train with as well.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. That's really, really good advice there. And like, did you do any other preparation as well? Like, I know there's all the training, like the physical training that you can do, but like, was there anything like unusual on the mandatory kit list that you had to go and get, or like,
a collapsing cup? And so I was so lucky. My friend who I was telling you about, who's done it a few times, he said to me that he had a spare one and a whistle, because there are two things I didn't have. You also have to have like a bivy bag. So if all goes wrong and you're in a difficult place and they need to come and get you, you have to have like a little survival bag. And I borrowed those. So at school, we're really lucky. We do a lot of outdoor ed. So some of the guys at work were able to lend that to me. So yeah, just the kind of thing that you would never have unless you're doing a race, and that's sort of their safety procedure. So collapsible cup, whistle, and the bivy bag were things that were sort of a throw for me.
Yeah, so you had to gather those. And then were are there any Cornish place names that people always pronounce wrong that we really shouldn't be coming to Cornwall and saying?
God. Not along that path, I don't think.
Good.
I think it's yeah.
They're all pretty straightforward, are they?
Yeah, I think so, but just because I'm from here. But you know, you get things like Roche along the A30, people call Roche, or there's one called Delabole, people call Delabole, and things like that that are quite funny. But I think, you know, along that stretch, it's quite straightforward, and there's a lot of really popular bits for tourists. So I think that's another one that makes it a little bit easier as well. Hopefully there's ones you've heard of, but feel free to message me after if you're like, oh, what on earth is this?
Yeah, put it in the YouTube comments, anyone who wants to know.
Yeah.
Because it's like our sat-nav in the past, you know, ages ago when we had sat-navs, it said we live near Peterborough and it called it Perturbera.
Oh no.
It
that would really throw
American.
People off, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Hey, Perturbera in 30 minutes.
Feeling very exotic. Yeah.
And did you have a plan around nutrition? Like, are you like a jelly babies person, or are you like into certain sports nutrition?
No, I really like proper food. So I don't know, it just makes me feel a bit sickly. Things like gels, I really don't get on with well. Like if I'm struggling to eat, you know, like when you get really dry mouth or things like that, and you're like, oh, I really, you know, can't stomach anything. I would make sure that I would eat something like a jelly baby. I had a gel in my bag because you have to have a gel in your bag to show that you've got a certain amount of nutrition with you. But they're not things that agree with me. So I like cutting up pizza, really, really tiny like chunks of pizza. So you have to have a backpack, but I also carried a bum bag with me on the day.
Okay.
So I had a pack of jelly in there because that's a little bit more me, a little bit more moisture. And then I had my tiny little chunks of pizza. Mm-hmm. And I also have some homemade granola, which is like full of nuts and sugar. And that just, you know, I feel that fuels me really well.
Oh.
Try and keep an eye on time and just be making sure I'm eating regularly, like every half an hour. I'm just like taking a little bit in. And then I used a Camelback, which I know that a lot of people use as well. And I took tablets with me. So I wasn't just having water. I was popping those in and keeping my sort of ion levels quite balanced, or trying to.
Like electrolytes and things in there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So like as I'm telling you this, I'm just remembering. I had like, I don't know if you've had this before on like endurance runs, where like you get your fingers swell up.
Oh, so, on hikes I have, yeah. Like when your hands are like down here swinging around, yeah.
Yeah, so I had that on the run and I kept like, you know, putting my arms above my head, like crunching my hands. But that's something I really struggled with. And I don't, you know, I was chatting to somebody around on the race and they're saying, oh, you know, that can be if you haven't got your electrolytes right. So I didn't know if I was like underdoing it or, you know, not hydrating myself enough for how much food I was eating. But that was something that really challenged me. So I made sure like, I first found that on, I don't know if it's Ironman or Rat, but in a previous race I found it. So I made sure I took my rings off and, you know, didn't have any of my hairbands on that I'd normally be wearing, just to sort of restrict that kind of like, you know, pressure feeling, I guess.
Yeah, to let your hands swell if they were going to swell and
exactly.
Not feel any pain from that.
Let them do what they want to do.
I'll just be fat hands, Lizzie.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, if you blow up a little glove, a polythene glove, and, a bit like that.
Like those. Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. Like an individual thing that a lot of other people might find as well. And did you plan anything about your pace? Because like I like have this coach that comes on to chat on the channel and we always do like a gradient profile, and I plan where I should be at each top of each mountain and each bottom and each checkpoint. Did you do one like that to plan it?
I sort of pace myself more thinking about the terrain ahead. So because it's so varying, undulating, and actually what is underfoot, I sort of did it more like, you know, take your time over those difficult passages, go at a good pace on the in-betweens, and then, you know, otherwise you're going to be stressed, you're going to be rushing, it's slippery, it's wet, it's whatever. And I really thought, you know, if I fall out there, that's me done. I'm not going to be able to race. So I just tried to maintain a really good pace on the flats, on the areas that I could run, so that I allowed myself that time and sort of alleviated that pressure.
Yeah, so you sort of like ran when you could run, and then you just completely were like, I'm not even going to try and
exactly.
run here because this is ridiculous. Yeah. That's really good to know.
Yeah, just unachievable, you know.
Yeah. Amazing. Yeah. And you mentioned with the route, like that there was a couple of places already you've mentioned that you were like, oh, left or right, looking for markers in the sand and all that kind of thing. Did you have it on a GPX watch, or like, did you have like the OS app on your phone or anything like that that would help?
So I know that people around did, so that they downloaded bits, but because it's somewhere that I've walked, somewhere that I know really familiarly, I didn't worry about that kind of thing. But actually, in hindsight, you know, you're not in your right mind, are you? You haven't started from this point, you're going to this point. So I think that'd be really helpful. You know, a lot of people come down like yourself, come down to the area to do the race. It's the kind of thing that, you know, without it, you might find really challenging.
Yeah, I think I'll definitely get that OS map app on my phone so I can refer to it.
and
it's quite a self-sufficient race, isn't it? There's no checkpoint on the 50 miler until at 20 miles at St Ives. Did you have a crew? Because I'm just wondering, I can probably carry all the food, but what about the water?
My sister and my husband, they were my pit crew for the day, and they were brilliant. So I had absolute must, like I love having a fizzy drink. So whether it's a Lucozade original, or I really like Coca-Cola as well, something salty, so crisps to have as well. So they were brilliant for topping me up. I really like to use something called Active 7. I don't know if you've heard of it, but it's like a spray-on massage. It's quite natural, so I really like it. And it's got sort of that deep heat effect, but it's, you know, like a small canister that you can spray. So it's a little bit more practical for on an active day, like if you're out on a race or whatever it might be, a CrossFit competition, whatever. It just sort of sits a bit better with me. So I really like that. And I've also got a therapy gun, you know, the portable ones that you can use. So
yeah,
I was like,
massage.
Yeah, exactly. So little niggling areas that you can do. So in the past, I've sort of struggled with my hip flexors. So that is something that I knew I was going to struggle with. So making sure I could stretch, having something that I could use for massage if I absolutely had to. So it is very much you need to take care of yourself. But, you know, just like everybody, you've got friends along the way who are going to help you out.
Yeah. Okay. So where...
Normally being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Did they meet you then? Are there set points that the crew can meet you?
So there are obviously particularly, you know, because it's being such a long race and because it's along such a stretch of coast path, it's not like a round and round thing. They were finding places where they could stop with the car park. So for like if people on the podcast are going down, or if you're thinking about where are they going to meet me, National Trust are really good at advertising their car park. So they're quite good ones to link up with along the way. And I remember I hadn't seen them for ages because I was coming across I ended up meeting them down near Pendeen, which is like absolutely stunning. If you're ever going not to run in, there's a beach you'd love to go to. That's a gorgeous beach to go to. But there's a car park just before there that they met me, and it'd been such a long stretch where I hadn't seen anybody, and there've been some really difficult passages. Like there's a bit where you come off the coast path, drop onto the tarmac, run up a great long hill, and then you're back on. And that's, you know, just so going from that softer ground onto that tarmac just feels like awful. So you think it'd be nice to have a bit more parchment, but actually it was really, really horrible. So that had been a really challenging stretch. And then I came up over the mining land and up to Pendeen, and I saw them, and I was just like, oh my God, I'm so relieved to see you. You know, you just feel like safe, don't you? You're like, oh, finally there's somebody here, someone to talk to, and just like offload like what's happened in the last passage, and you know, get a little top up of everything. So that was, yeah, so nice. Oh, really nice.
What kind of mileage was that at then?
What would that be? 20 St Ives, so that is before then 15-18 maybe.
Okay, so 15 or so miles. 15-18 miles. Because I'm just wondering if it's possible to do it without a crew, because I don't...
Sorry, it's one of my students.
Hello. I don't really have anybody that can go down with me, so I don't have a crew. And then I thought, oh, maybe I can just pilfer some water off some other people's crew.
Yeah,
but I don't know who will be there at the same time as me, so I don't know if people take spare water.
Yeah, no, as you go along, there are people and you know, like my guys were, they're saying, you know, does anybody need anything? What can I help you with? And I think that's a bit of a runner's way, isn't it? And definitely a Cornish way to be sort of looking out for others and you know, care, you know, it's a mega day, isn't it? So yeah, definitely. I think as you go along, there are people supporting.
Yeah, okay. So do you think I could get some water off some other people, perhaps? Do you think they would
Yeah, definitely.
I won't worry about that.
It is a good turnout.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Cool. And so, so you said your training went kind of reasonably well, but you always feel like you could do more. How did you feel standing on that start line?
Yeah. So my friend, he can be a bit tough love, and he is like, you know, you've not put the miles in, you're going to struggle, da, da, da. And I was just like, do you know what? Even more so, like, screw you, I'm going to be fine. But there was that sort of niggle in the back of my mind of, you know, I've done my 33, 34, whatever it was. You know, I really need to be able to push on and get through this. And sort of like saying to myself, you know, walk as much as you need to walk. You know, it sounds really negative, but I was like, what is the lowest pace that I've got to travel at to be able to get myself over the line? And I just sort of like kept that in the back of my mind. You know, I had a watch on, so I was like, what is the minimum pace I need to be able to do? And I think it was like 20 miles an hour or something like that to get through your cutoffs and to make sure that you finish time.
Like, so 20 minute miles, I think.
So I was like, as long as I'm moving at that pace, even over these slow sections where I know I've sort of got time in the bank because I've gone faster on the other bits, you know, even over those challenging passages, like, make sure you are going your 20 minutes and you're not sort of sitting back and sort of thinking, you know, it'll be all right, I'll speed up, because you never know, do you? You don't know what your energy levels are going to feel like on the day, and you sort of hope that your sort of endurance training is going to carry you through, and like those good feelings are going to carry you through, but you just don't really know, do you?
You have no idea. And so how did it go to the first checkpoint? Did you have like any highs and lows before you got to St Ives?
Yeah, so I ended up with my knee really inflamed, and that was, I was just like, oh my gosh, is this going to sort of put me out? So that was really hard, and like, because of that, like, as I was coming down the hill, I could really feel it with every step. That jarring on my knee was just such a challenge, but I knew that at St Ives they had their, I think it's called Omega, but they're just a group that really support on things like that, so I knew that there were going to be physios there. And funnily enough, someone that checked me over was a person that lives in my village.
So that was
really nice as well, just to be able to be. And he said, you know, this is, it's muscular. It's not going to be like long lasting damage. You know, if you want to carry on, you will be okay to carry on, like with the injury as it is now. So I was like,
really,
you know,
reassuring.
Got to do this. Yeah, got to do this. So it was good.
Totally reassuring.
Oh, sorry, there's
are your kids
a
in the
really
background?
Upset child. Not my child, but I'm like, you know, it's that maternal thing of being
I thought it might have been your kid, and I thought you might have needed to just go for a minute.
No, my lovely mum is looking after them, so I'm off the hook for a minute.
Oh, brilliant. Yeah. Oh, thank you so much to your lovely mum. So you had a bit of an injury going on. How were your feet during the race?
Oh my gosh, yeah, really, really sore. So I ran in hockers. And I love them, you know, the cushioning on them, I think it's fantastic. And I just feel like they're, for my sort of foot, I know that everyone sort of sits something differently, but for me, I absolutely love them and I feel that they're great for me. So I run in hockers, but even then, you know, that inflammation of that friction on your feet, I did end up with some really nasty blisters and I lost 3 toenails.
Oh, no.
So that didn't look great this summer. But yeah, so they have come back to me now, but yeah, they went really, really awful. So I lost 3 toenails. The next day I absolutely could not walk. So my in-laws live over the road. So my husband carried me over there because I was like, I actually just can't do this. He did like bridal style, carried me over the road. So I got a big fry up with them.
Yeah,
it was really great. Aww. It was so nice. And my sister, she's a great auntie to my kids. So she took the kids for a couple of hours, and it was just like that break that you need, isn't it?
That's what I think. You need childcare on the day of the actual race, but then like after the race, you also need a day of childcare as well.
Yeah, definitely.
Well,
definitely.
If not two. I can be here, but I can't run around with you.
Yeah, exactly. And I, like, because my feet got a bit wet as well, like I know that added to it.
Yeah.
So that was something at like pit stops. So I was like, I really need to change my socks, like keep on top of it. I had spare socks in my bag, and I don't know if you do this, but I put some talcum powder in my socks as well.
I haven't done that before. So I know this trench stuff. I haven't actually used it before. Really shouldn't probably just use it for the first time on race day, so I need to start using that.
Give it a trial.
So
I find that really good, like really absorbing. And the other something that got recommended to me by a friend actually were socks that you can get that have toe holes in them. So I don't know if you've ever had this, where like a nail from the other foot will really rub and things like that. So that just eliminates that altogether. And I know some people find that a bit funny, don't they? Like toes in different holes and stuff. But I really
like
them.
It's like a glove
really
for your foot.
I really like them.
Oh, cool. I really like them too. I love the idea of them. But then if I'm in a shoe, which is pushing my toes together as it is, I find that the sock exacerbates that problem because it's made made it kind of bigger. It's made the whole foot bigger, hasn't it? So then it squishes it together even more. So I go for really wide toe box shoes now. So that's working for me now. I've tried like so many different ones, so many different insoles and socks. But back to you. So we have a question from Peter, who wants to know, how do you do it? It must be so mentally challenging when you're chasing those cutoffs. Like, did you know that you were going to be chasing the cutoffs? I suppose because you've said the training didn't go as planned. You knew that you would kind of be at that point. But how was it in your mind, like going, oh God, I really need to get to St. Ives at this time?
In some ways it can be positive because you're like, you know, fantastic, I've made it, and that kind of like spurs you on. Like the attrition rate, it's funny to say, use the word to describe it because it is the arc of attrition, so no surprise. But the attrition rate is relatively high. So, you know, every time you're making it, you're like, okay, fantastic, you know, I've not been knocked out this round, like I keep going.
Like Squid Games.
Yeah, exactly. So in some ways it's really good because it draws you on, and in other ways it's like, oh my God, am I going to achieve this? But I think because I decided I was going to do it, I'm like, I'm 100% completing this. Like, more so, you know, my daughter was about 18 months at that point, and then I've got friends being like, you haven't trained enough, and like, they're dads, so you know, dads have a different role sometimes, and I'm like, those dads definitely have a different role in their household. So I'm like, you've got no idea, like I can do this, I'm going to show you, kind of thing. So in my head it was like that. It's like, I know that I can do this, I've been through really challenging things before, like I'm going to push on, I'm going to get this done. So that was like my driving factor all the time. I'm looking down at my watch and being like, right, I've got to travel at X miles an hour to get past this point. And every time you achieve it, it's just like, you know, I can do this. I'm going to make it.
Oh, well done. You sound like a really positive person, which is brilliant. I suppose the great thing about the great thing about the arc, it's only got two cutoffs really, hasn't it? It's got St. Ives at 20 miles where there's a checkpoint there. And then it's the end. So which is 15 and a half hours.
There is Gudrevi as well. So when you get to once you've gone through Hale, past Gwythion, you get to Gudrevi Head, and that was the one where we were really close. I think we're about
there's a cut
6 minutes. And we're as you're coming through the dunes, and I'm like, you know, we're starting to feel like we're getting lost, and I'm like, oh my God, if we don't get to Gudrevi at that point, like this is going to be a nightmare. So it's like sort of thinking, get yourself to higher ground, like see where the sea is, see where, because once you're down in the dunes, like if you're not someone that lives coastal, you probably can't imagine, but like once you drop down into a dune and you just cannot see around you, it's so you're just like, oh. So we're like constantly like, get to higher ground and see where we are. And my husband had just dropped me off this chicken and avocado sandwich, and I was just oh my God, this is heaven. So I was like running with that, and I was like, even this sandwich is going to have to go away. Like, nothing takes precedence over getting to where we need to be.
Yeah. So it would be so frustrating to like DNF and all get timed out because of navigational rather than the whole training. Like, you couldn't train enough. Exactly.
So that is a massive factor in this one.
And so coming on to the very reason that we've got you onto this podcast in the first place, it is celebrating people coming last. When did you find out, and like, when did you realize, oh, I'm in last place here?
So I think it was not long after that. So there were, so you know, we'd gone through St. Ives, so I know that a load of people were cut off there because I'd gone ahead of them, and I was maybe, I don't know, half an hour, maybe more, 45 minutes. And I knew that there were loads of people behind me. So I was like, I know that a load of people have been cut there.
Yeah,
then we got to Gudrevi, and Yeah, and I know that they were saying, because, you know, they keep a track of who's where and everything else.
Yeah.
I know they were saying, you know, these are the last few through the checkpoint at this point.
Yeah.
And there was like two people that had come down, a couple, and they were in the dunes with me. And then there were two guys ahead of me. And I worked with them for a really long period. So we were like power walking, just talk. I think they were like neighbours, and they, you know, both got into running. So they decided to come down together. So I walked a lot of North Cliffs with them, so coming from Gadrevi, like along North Cliffs and getting towards Portreath, and then I got to the point where I was like, I couldn't do that sort of phase of walk run anymore. Yeah. I was very much like power walking stage and just like going through the motions and getting it done, because I was really struggling at that point. And I like knew that these steps were coming for me. Yeah. So I was like, I don't know, I was just like, you know, putting that mental game ahead and being like, I feel like I physically can't do this, but I know that I can.
What kind of mileage is that then? Is that about 45 miles or something like that?
Yeah, so that'll be, how far out of there? Yeah, I think that's about right, 45, 46, because that's like the last big village before you get to Porthtowan.
Okay.
So I was like coming through there, so they went on ahead, and I was like, I didn't know for definite that I was the last person. Mm-hmm. But then the sweepers come through.
Okay.
And that's when I knew. So they were like, but they also couldn't help me, so they can see me like looking around going, where am I going now?
And they're
like,
they can't help you. Oh,
and
that's
so yeah,
really
so
mean.
I know, and it feels like that when you're exhausted and you're just like, just tell me, like, yeah, just nod. No one needs to know.
No.
But, yeah, but like, you get it as well.
Why
like
shouldn't
it.
They help you anyway?
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
It feels frustrating, doesn't it? But
yeah,
that's like, you know, uniform across the board. You've got to be self-sufficient and
yeah,
all the rest of it.
Yeah.
So I was like, right, just
understood.
I was like, you know, hit and hope, let's go. So that's what I realised. And then I got to the bottom in Porthtowan. So you come down like the road. And I knew that up to the eco park, you go like along the road and then you like snake up and up and up through a load of gorse. And I knew that was going to be hell on my knee. So I got to the bottom. My torch battery had run out.
Oh,
and I was just like, I was like, I know the area, so I know I can do it. But at the same time, you just feel so, it's like, it's cold. It's because it's January. It's cold. It's dark. Nobody else is around. And so it does feel like isolating, and you know, you do feel like you know, you've got to the end, you really have got to the end of your like sort of ability there.
Yeah.
And so I got to the bottom in Porthtowan, and my husband was there. I started crying. I was like, I don't care about finishing, like, just put me in the car, like, I have to go home now. And we rounded the corner and he was like, okay, I mean, obviously, you know, I don't want to do that, but if you want me to, I will put you in the car and take you home.
And when was this? 48 miles or something?
Literally, yeah. I think it's even less. I think I had like half a mile or a mile to go.
Oh, no.
And I was like, I just can't. I was like, I can't do this. And then he goes, okay, but your nieces are there and they've been waiting for you for hours. So just be prepared that they are here to cheer you on. And they'd made this enormous sign, like, I'm not joking you, not like a Hollywood little cute, like, go Lizzie. It was like, go Auntie Lizzie, you're amazing, we love you. And I'm just like, oh, please don't do this to me. So they're standing there by the unicorn pub where they've been with their parents, like waiting for me to come through.
Oh.
And I'm just like in tears. And I was like, I'm gonna have to do it for them.
Yeah,
so
definitely.
So I'm like then snaking up and down, and I get to the top. Yeah, you're just like up and down this gorse, and I can hear at the top of the eco park, I can hear it. So I know I'm getting closer and closer, and I can start to see lights. And I hear them over the tannoy going, we're waiting for our last competitor now, like Lizzie Hughes, waiting for her to come over the finish line. You know, she's got X number of minutes to get here. Like, I'd really hate to be the person that decides whether she cuts off or not. And I thought,
no,
you're not going to have to, because I'm going to make it. And I crossed the line with a minute and a half to spare.
I'm just like, yeah.
Yeah, and I hugged the organizer. I can't remember her name. But I hugged her and I was like, I'm so embarrassed. I feel so embarrassed. Like, because, you know, coming through last, she was like, don't you dare. She was like, get your photo taken and we're going to talk about this in a minute. And she was just, you know, so supportive. And she was just like, you've done an amazing job.
Yeah.
Like, thank you. You know, we're so proud of you. All the good stuff. And just made me feel really positive. So that was lovely.
Brilliant. So initially, when you crossed the finish line, you felt sad because of the last place.
Yeah.
But then you were helped. Yeah,
exactly. And then, like, you look back over the race and you're like, you know, first, last, whatever, what a flipping race. Exactly. And also, like, you think of all the people that have put in all that training and they weren't able to finish, or they weren't able to meet through the cutoffs, and you're just like, actually, you know, that is amazing, and what you've achieved is fantastic. So yeah, after the initial, oh my God, everyone's looking at me, I've come last, after that point, you know, it was great. It was really great.
But you know what, I think everybody does look at the person that's come last with a huge respect. I think that people, you know, like, on all, you know, we organise a local race here, the Valentine's 30k, everybody, all the, like, the first place athletes, everybody, if there's the people coming last, like the last five people or so, they are like, they all turn out, they're all like lining the last bit, and they're cheering,
so lush.
And the person's coming over crying, because, you know, it's probably the longest they've ever run in their lives, or they've just you never know what's happened. Like, people have been coming back from cancer, or they've, you know, they've just had this first race after they've had a baby, and it's just incredible. And it's just, it's, I just think it's not, it's like, you can look at it and be like, oh, I came last, but it's not really coming last, because you've beaten all those people that couldn't even make it and DNF'd, and also anyone who didn't even enter the race. So it's not really last place, is it?
No. Fastest loser.
That's
my friends are joking with me, but you know, and I think it is like you were saying then, you know, you never know what people are coming back from, and it's just amazing what your body can do, and what your mind can get you through.
Yeah, and
it is fantastic.
Are you proud of it now?
Yeah, definitely. And I just feel like, you know, it's something that I'd definitely like to do again. But, you know, the preparation, the time that needs to go into it, and all the rest of it, it's not a good time for me now. You know, I've still got my children. They're still in as much need as ever. And then I've had a change of role at school as well. So I'm covering a maternity, and I'm being a head of year.
Wow.
So that's a massive job. So it's not, you know, now's not a good time, but it's, you know, something that I would love to do again, and to see if I can better myself, like, especially on that course. You know, there are other ultra runners there, and they were saying, you know, this is so challenging, and it really is, and an amazing feat, really, to get through it.
Definitely. So is there anything, like, if you do go for this again in a couple of years time, is there anything you would do differently, like a bit of advice to anybody?
What would I like to do differently,
like, either in training or the race?
Yeah, definitely. I'd like to do more training, and I'd like to practice the different sections again. So things that I thought that I'd be okay on and wasn't. Bits like that. I think, you know, all of the mining sections where it is really, really loose underfoot. Just sort of like thinking about how I'm going to pace that differently, because I didn't really account for that when I'm thinking about, you know, I'm going to have to go slow over these sections. I didn't really think about not just the terrain, but actually, like, what you're experiencing underfoot. I didn't really account for that. So I think that's a lot of what sort of held me up as well. I mean, I think in terms of fueling it and drinking a lot, I think I really nailed that. But, you know, that's something that people can get easy, quite get done really quite easily. But so I think that would, I'd maintain the same. I think maybe I'd think about changing shoe, which someone said to me about, because you know there is there's a lot of coastal path, but it's hard to choose a shoe that's going to be appropriate all the way through. And I think even so much as you're getting pressure on different parts of your feet, so you're not, it can feel like quite encased, can't it, when you're running and you're feeling pressure. Like, I really get it on the sort of edge of my foot, so to be able to change into different trainers for that, I think would really help as well. And I know a friend of mine did that, so he used a different bit for more of the coast path, and then when we came into the bits that were more climbing, he had tighter shoes. That sort of suited him. So
changing actual shoes, so not just changing shoe for the next race, but having your crew have a different shoe on the route. I've never done that on a 50 mile. That sounds like a really good idea. Not just changing socks.
I think as well, because they're wet and sweaty. So it's something that I was like, oh, that won't be of interest to me. But actually, in hindsight, I think I would do that.
Cool. Oh, that's really interesting. That sounds really cool. So you would do it again. So we've answered that question.
It's not completely taken me out of the picture.
Have you got any other races, any trail running or ultra running races booked for 2024 or anything that's on your bucket list?
Not for this year, but I've got a friend who's just, he did his first race, I think it was October, so I'd really like to support him. So the next one I do, I'll definitely do his race. So it's a Cornish one again, which is really nice. So, you know, it's my friend's husband, so I'm like, if anyone's gonna, you know, entice me back to the course sooner rather than later, it'd be that. So, awesome. Yeah.
Okay, so is he putting...
Are you looking forward to it? Oh, sorry.
Is he putting on a race?
Yeah, so he's just done it, and they'll do it again next year. So,
okay, what's
so
it
I'll
called?
Do that one. Yeah. I'd have to get back to you on that. I can't remember. That's really awful, isn't it? It's really awful.
It's just another Cornish race.
Yes, it sounds
lovely. It sounds like you've got a really great trail and ultra running scene going on down there.
Yeah, we are lucky.
Wait, I've got some relatives actually in Cornwall, so they live in Falmouth, so it's not hugely close, but I will pop in on them as well for sure. I'm looking forward to the race, but I haven't my training's just not gone to plan at all, so my training plan is to walk 5 miles a day, because I just every time I start training I get a cold again, so this is really not a good time of year to train.
But I'm coming anyway
because all the terrain that you've talked about, it sounds like my ideal cup of tea. I love it when you can't run. It's like I'm not really an ultra runner. I'm an ultra hiker. So it sounds brilliant. I can't wait for the views. Cornwall's absolutely stunning. The cliffs, the bays, the sandy beaches, the headlands, the beautiful sea and the sunset and all this. And it sounds absolutely incredible. So we've just got a few quick fire questions for you before we end the broadcast, before we just recap on the sponsorship as well. So quick fire questions. Do you like, you've already answered this, but flapjack or gels?
Flapjack, definitely.
No brainer. Okay, beer or wine?
Beer.
Excellent, my kind of gal. Kindle or a real book?
Real book.
Excellent. Do you like to listen to music on your run or the bird song, which we can hear in the background?
Yes, definitely no music.
Just bird song. Yep. Excellent. Camping or glamping?
Camping. I do DOV at school, so get plenty of that under my belt.
Yep. Awesome. Seaside run or mountain run? Now, this is going to be interesting seeing as you live in Cornwall.
Ooh. Yeah, so I think, a little bit spoiled. So maybe I'd like to do a little bit more mountain. So we love going to the lakes and doing the walking. So I think I'd like to try a bit of that.
Yeah, awesome. And the final question, would you consider yourself an ultra runner or an ultra hiker?
Ultra hiker.
Yeah, me too.
Fab.
Awesome. Okay, so just before we go, this podcast and broadcast is sponsored by NAC Sports Nutrition, who make long-lasting energy bars, waffles and drinks using high-quality, sustainable ingredients. I will be using NAC on my Arc of Attrition 50 this January, so go to NAC.com for more information on that, and you'll see me scoffing them in my race film that I'm going to make. So thank you so much, Lizzie. It's been such a great pleasure to chat to you today about the Arc of Attrition 50. Congratulations on your amazing last place. I think it should be massively celebrated, and I'm so glad that you are proud of it now.
Thank you so much. That's really kind. I've enjoyed being on. Thank you for having me.
Awesome. Thank you so much for all your advice. It's been brilliant.
Take care.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.